Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse Opoyan.
Welcome to Rewind, the Wisconsin Eye and WIS Politics Look at This Week in the Capitol. First off, we have WIS Eye Was There, with testimony on dark stores, the effort to land the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee in 2020, the Democratic Governor Forum this week on Wednesday, and Governor Scott Walker talking out. Some people don't know he has an opponent yet. WIS Eye Was There.
I purposely, as an individual, and encourage many people, as many as will talk to me in Hartford, to shop local. It's important. Why? Because those local places are different than going on the internet. But if you're going to come to us and threaten lawsuits about how we're going to be set up as and actually looked at as far as the value of your property, and you want to be taxed like it's empty, why? Why am I going to shop at the local Walgreens? I just picked up a prescription Saturday at Walgreens, at my local Walgreens. Why don't I just go online?
There is a perception about Milwaukee that Milwaukee can't handle something like this. There is a perception about Milwaukee that it doesn't have enough hotel rooms, that it can't put on a convention of this size. And we need to break through that and prove them wrong. And that is something, that's an uphill battle. It's something Houston and Miami don't have to worry about.
If we nominate somebody, a good person, who praised his education budget, who said it was kid-friendly, who said that it reflected his budget priorities, when I know it was a crooked budget, it was a Alex budget, it was a Koch brothers budget. That's not a contrast. It gives the appearance of Republican light. We need a very aggressive, articulate candidate who's going to get up there and eviscerate him on the stage. If you ask an open question to a liar, to Scott Walker, he'll have you for lunch.
I need to respond to that cheap shot at the end here. My budget was absolutely pro-kid. And the reason I said that is because Scott Walker adopted that budget, almost 90% of it. That's why I said that, and I'll never back off from that. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now and asking for even larger increases.
I've actually had people say to me, do you even have an opponent? I still bump into people who don't even know that there are Democrats running against me. We're going to make clear the contrast going forward, but I think that's just part of it. People don't yet fully recognize and appreciate that we have a race, and in the state of Wisconsin, any competitive race is just that. It's a competitive race, and we expect it will be all the way through November 6th.
All right, let's talk money. All right, so one of my favorite things about covering politics, Jesse, is just the numbers game. Mm-hmm. So in looking at the pre-primary reports, this covers July 1st to July 30th, so basically the month of July. So Kel DeRoy's raised the most money, right? Mm-hmm. $147,000 roughly. She didn't put any more of her own money in, at least in terms of a loan, and she had almost $300,000 in the bank. Then you're going to go from Kelda to Malin to Tony to Soglin to Flynn, McCabe, Paid, and then a surprising last place finisher, Kathleen Vinehout. What did you see in those numbers that you thought was interesting?
Well, you hinted at it. Kathleen Vinehout, not only was she not raising a lot of money, she didn't spend a dime during this particular period of time.
Kind of crunch time, a little surprising.
This is the time to spend the money if you've got it.
her biggest donation was $100, which she collected nine times in that period. Mm-hmm. I get the impression her campaign is kind of running out of steam toward the end when others are kind of picking up. Is that what you sense too?
Yeah. And, you know, of course, she and Mike McCabe are sort of the two in that field who make the argument that money is not the object. But I think just about everyone else in the race would say the reality is, you know, as much as they might not like to have a lot of money to worry about, you kind of have to.
I have a theory that of the field, it looks like Tony is the front runner, and people talk about Malin and Kelda being like in that top tier, like the Willows 2 catch fire. I have an odd suspicion, and I've asked people about this, that Vinehout or McCabe could surprise people in their vote total in the end because they have this odd coalition of like Madison Isthmus lefties and rural progressives.
Definitely.
That they could still do okay. I just don't see them as a threat for the nomination. Do you disagree?
I would agree 100% with that. I think, you know, the people that you and I both talk to are talking about those three, Evers, Royce, and Mitchell, in terms of that top three tier. But You even if you leave the Madison area, you drive around the state. You know, Mike McCabe's got a lot of people on the ground holding up signs. I was driving through Fond du Lac a few weeks ago. There was a guy with an overpass sign for McCabe. You know, he's got a ground game for sure, and Vinehout does too, especially in the part of the state where she's from. I don't know that anyone needs to worry about them winning the primary, you know, superseding them on that. But I think that we could be surprised by them maybe coming in second or third.
So a couple of nuggets from his fundraising reports. So one, Carol Dyselak had that $300,000 in the bank, roughly. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, she loaned the campaign $255,000 on June 30th, mm-hmm. not long after taking a second mortgage of $235,000. One of the questions I have is, will she spend that money in the final 2 weeks? Because the last polls we saw had her still in single digits. Do you spend that money? When this is real personal money, that's money that hurts. I mean, she's already put $96,000 in of her own money.
Yeah.
Do you think she spends that money in the closing weeks?
That's a big question, right? I mean, this is the time to start, like we said, this is the time to spend that money. She's really, I think throughout the race, tried to make the argument that she's got the lowest burn rate among some of these candidates, and that's something that probably no one but political insiders cares about, but you know, whoever comes out of this has the benefit of potentially partnering up with the Democratic Governors Association in terms of the cushion that they've built up, and so, you know, it could be smart for her to say, I've got someone who could be there for me if I'm the candidate at the end of this. Maybe it's time to start spending that money, but it hurts when it's your own money.
Yeah. Now, Malin Mitchell, he has been fueled by unions, and looking at his last report, I thought it was interesting. More than half of the money came from one donation.
Yeah.
$66,000 from the Engineers Political Education Committee in Washington, D.C. I think the issue for Malin is he hasn't been able to translate that union support into a rush of small-dollar donors or even big-dollar donors. So he's kind of trailed the individual contribution compared to, like, some others. What do you think about that dynamic for him?
I think that's, like you said, it's kind of been that way from the start. It's always been the most significant portion of his donations has come from those unions. But I think people who are backing him make the argument when you've got someone like Cal DeRoy is talking about having a low burn rate, people who are in the Mitchell camp are saying, we are spending that money on field organizers, we're spending that money on a ground game, and so it doesn't matter so much where it's coming from because they're putting it to use and getting people on the ground. Whether that is what's actually happening, what's working is another question.
Yeah. One more note now. These reports don't include everything spent on TV. They give us a hard dollar number. So I found that Kel DeRoy's topped the Dem field for TV ads in July at about $464,000. Evers at $172,000 and change. But he's getting help from Forever Wisconsin, so it seems like balancing things out. I don't get the sense that anybody is really kind of like dominating the airwaves in the Democratic field in the final weeks.
I would agree. I think, you know, it depends on the part of the state that you're in and where people are targeting. But someone like Kel DeRoy obviously has the kind of ground to make up. You look at polls that we've seen, Tony Evers has the name recognition. Anyone else like a Kel DeRoy or a Malin, they've been polling low, and that's because they don't have the name recognition. So this is how you do that.
Last thing. So all this stuff that the Democrats did, don't forget that Governor Walker outraised him by quite a bit.
Yes. Quite a bit.
Now, Governor Walker raised $670,000 in the period. He spent $1.7 million on everything and had $4.9 million in the bank. 4 years ago, though, he raised $1.2 million in that period. Mm-hmm. He also spent $1.7 million 4 years ago and had $7.1 million in the bank. What is going on with Governor Walker that he is kind of off the pace he set 4 years ago? Granted, Governor Walker is the best fundraiser I've ever seen in Wisconsin, but he's just not quite where he was before. Why?
You know, I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit of fatigue, right? I mean, he's been around for a while. People have been giving him money for a while. But, you know, it's certainly in comparison to all these other candidates, maybe he just feels like he doesn't have to do that much right now because he's still been consistently on the air. I mean, is he up to 10 ads now in the time
more than a dozen, I think.
Yeah, in the time that these candidates have been running and each of them kind of trying to break out and get their own ad. I mean, Walker's just been consistently on TV this whole time, so maybe he's just not that concerned about the fundraising right now. I don't know.
You know, two of the theories that I've heard is that 1 in 14, there was still some presidential buzz about Governor Walker.
Yeah.
So there was more of a gnat because it was right in the afterglow of, you know, 2012.
Right.
And people are talking about maybe he could be. So, but also he doesn't have a named opponent. You know, Walker has done well, people tell me, by having, like, the boogeyman. Mm-hmm. There is no announced boogeyman just yet. I mean, he can talk about, like he has with, like, the prison prison talk from several candidates,
right,
but there's not one to lock in. I don't know if that's kind of like taking some of the steam out. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's there is no clear opponent, and it's you don't want to take the risk of accidentally elevating someone that you don't want to face or anything like that. So, yeah, the presidential element's an interesting one. That wind has kind of been taken out of the sails on that.
But I would bet he's going to run again, would you?
For president?
Yes.
Maybe someday I could see it.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more about this primary. In looking at Tuesday, I've been hearing kind of two theories. One, that somebody just has to present a viable, positive message to Tony because he's leading. Every poll that I've seen, he's been leading. And I've been told private polling has him up as well. But it's partly because of name ID. And if you just presented a positive, you know, message on TV and radio, you could peel people off of him. The second one was you needed somebody, preferably not yourself, to tear him down while you're being built up.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen anybody tearing Tony Evers down on TV or radio. Now, right. I have seen Matt Flynn with his comments in some of the debates,
mm-hmm,
but there's been no negative on Tony Evers. Why do you think that is?
I think probably because people have to sort of concede the potential inevitability that he's the nominee, and you don't want to tarnish him needlessly at this point.
I think that's part of what, from what I understand, for Gronick and Walks, why they got out. There was a path to them to win the nomination, or maybe win the nomination, but included tearing down Tony Evers and,
yeah,
spending a lot of their personal money. And even by doing that, there was a narrow path. So it's kind of like they don't want to damage the nominee.
Right.
But to become the nominee, they have to take some sheen off of Tony Evers, which kind of leads me again to the idea that it seems like it's his to lose going into Tuesday. And the fact that nobody's dominating the airways, there's been no big buy from Emily's List, there's been no big buy,
yeah,
from a union on TV or radio.
Yeah.
It's only Forever Wisconsin for an independent group doing stuff. I just see it as kind of static. The question that I get from people, however, is Malin does have unions doing canvassing for him.
Sure.
I counted $170,000 independent expenditures between billboards, mailers, yard signs, and canvassing. That might help him because they don't really have a built-in ground game, you know, their own. I mean, they're limiting their resources.
Yeah.
Maybe that helps.
Maybe.
With all the undecideds, maybe, a Keldo or a Malin catches fire in the final days because people go, you know, I'm one of the 30-some% who isn't committed to anybody. I might go here. But then people tell me when you see the Emerson poll that has Evers beating Walker, it reinforces the idea that this is the guy who's kind of out in front. And it helps him in the primary. Do you, right, ballpark?
Yeah, I think those undecideds are, of course, the question. And are people looking at this and thinking, I like somebody else better, I'm more excited about someone else, I'm going to throw my support to them in the primary when I have the opportunity to do that? Or are they seeing those polls and having that that thought reinforced that this is not only the candidate with the most name recognition to win the primary, but that will give him a boost heading into the general? I don't know.
Now, speaking of the general election, this is a good transition. Governor Walker's not waiting for August 15th to start mm-hmm. taking shots at his opponent. So let's watch the video. Governor Walker's been talking about the Democrats saying that they're going to make Wisconsin less safe, that they want to release all these prisoners. Let's watch a video of Governor Walker addressing the plan from some Democrats, at least in Governor's Field, to release or to reduce the state's prison population.
But if you look at at least four of the candidates running for governor on the Democrat side, when asked about the proposal to cut the prison population in half, Tony Evers has said absolutely, and that's a goal that's worth accomplishing. Mike McCabe has said, first of all, our goal should be to cut our prison population in half, and we can do that. It's realistic and achievable goal. Kelda Roy said, by the end of my first term, we're going to have half the number of people incarcerated as we do today. And Kathleen Vineholt said, absolutely doable statistic. This is something that people should be concerned about, because there's this incredible myth out there by some on the far, far left in this state and in this nation that our prisons are somehow just filled with people who've had a mere possession of marijuana. That's just not the case. The data clearly shows in the state of Wisconsin that 2/3 of the offenders are in for violent offenses. I think there's not a bigger difference right now in terms of who the candidates are running for governor and the Democrat side and myself. This is about as clear cut as it gets. If you believe that violent offenders should be let out early, then one of these candidates is probably your candidate. If you believe that violent offenders should serve the sentence that they were given, then I'm the only one on the ballot who's made that absolutely clear.
Jesse, why is this flaring up now?
Well, this is, as you alluded to earlier, something that the Democratic field is relatively united on. I think you and I had talked about the sort of misstep potentially of naming a specific number threshold that they're trying to reach in terms of ramping down that prison population. You know, that makes it easier for someone like Scott Walker to go in and say, well, if you release X many inmates, you know, you're going to have to let some of these people out who are violent criminals. You know, fear is a powerful motivator. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to cast a negative sheen over the entire Democratic field when you don't have a named opponent, when you don't have that boogeyman, you can make people afraid and say that all of the Democrats are going to make this state more dangerous. This has been the tagline for the Republican Party throughout most of the primary, is that it's a, quote, dangerous race to the left, right?
There's a nuance that Governor Walker is kind of glossing over, right? The Democrats are talking about reducing the prison population. Mm-hmm. They haven't, you know, Kelda has said in her first term, nobody else has really put a timetable on, I don't think. But there's a difference between reduce and release. Yeah. But to Walker, if you're going to reduce it by half, you have to release people. That gives him the opening, I sense, to go, okay, well, if you want to cut half, I think his numbers this week were 2/3 the people in prison are for violent crimes.
Right.
So which of these guys are you going to let out? You know, yeah. And they're all going to be scary people. And I can see the ad already, you know, 4 or 5 scary dudes who've done bad things, you know, which of these guys want to release. The other thing I sense is that Walker has a prison problem of his own. I mean, the youth prison up in northern Wisconsin, we have perpetually understaffed prisons. Corrections guards are making buttloads of overtime because of the problem. But that's more of a management issue, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing I get from people is that while it may be horrible to see a story about prisoners being mistreated, people kind of aren't sympathetic to people who are in prison because they're there for a reason in their mind. So I don't know if voters really get outraged by that stuff. However, it can go into, from what people tell me, the management question. Prisons aren't being run properly. Kids are being abused. Highways are crumbling, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
This is different because it's kind of like this opening for Walker to say, you know, they're going to let these people out.
Yeah.
So as a side note, he's not the only one attacking his opponents early. Tammy Baldwin now is in a TV ad hitting both Leah Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson about Buy American. And now I saw digital ads about you can't trust them on choice. So.
Yeah.
It's she's not the only one putting lane on this marker ahead of the primary.
That's right.
So speaking of the Senate race, Jesse, let's talk Republican primary time.
All right.
What is going to determine that race going down the stretch?
The big question here is the Republican Party machine as strong as it once was and as strong as we think it is, or are Republican voters a little more motivated by this change argument, which we saw, obviously, with the election of Donald Trump? Republican Party is backed Leah Vukmir because of the vote at the convention. Mm-hmm. They're giving her support. They're essentially all but lined up behind her. You know, even Governor Walker hasn't endorsed her, but everyone in his apparatus is really backed up behind her, where, you know, Kevin Nicholson's got a lot more support from that sort of maverick-type wing, from people coming in from outside of Wisconsin spending on his behalf. But there's a real movement, I think, too, to, as we've seen in the Democratic primary as well, of people who just kind of want to reject that, this is what the party is handing to me, I want something else.
I think by one count I saw, groups backing Nichols have spent about $11 million in the home stretch. Those backing Vukmir spent less than $3 million. So that is a difficult, normally, that is a difficult disparity to overcome. The question that I've had, though, is like the air cover for Kevin Nicholson versus the ground game for Leah, because, you know, Kevin is a first-time candidate. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure he has a massive ground game of people who are knocking doors. I mean, I'm sure there are volunteers.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are some people doing it. I've not seen many reports filed showing that.
Yeah.
That doesn't match what the state party has. Now, the state party won't just turn out Leah Vukmir voters. They'll turn out Republicans in general.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I understand, when they're doing these calls, they're going to say, hey, we back Leah Vukmir kind of thing.
Yeah.
The other big thing in this is, how's Donald Trump playing this primary?
Yeah.
It's been fascinating talking to people. I get very mixed messages about who's winning.
Mm-hmm.
But it is clear that people think, and I talked to at least, that the Trump issue is hurting Leah down the stretch. Now, this is video that surfaced from March of 2016 where she said Trump is offensive to everyone. She was at one of Charlie Sykes' old kind of annual spring gathering of conservatives talking about things. That video surfaced in March of 2016. She was where a lot of Republican primary voters were.
Yes.
They went from Walker to maybe a Rubio like she did to a Cruz because it was the last stand for the Never-Trumpers.
Yep.
Then she came over to Trump in the end, and she did a radio ad for him.
Yeah.
But March of 16, a lot of them were there. But that video seems to be having an impact, which is why Sean Duffy is doing an ad that both Leah's paying for and the state GOP to call him fake news. I mean, Do you think that's going to be a key issue down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on whether Wisconsin Republicans are thinking back and thinking, you know what, I was in that position too. I maybe wasn't really on board with Donald Trump early on, but now that he's in office, I support what he's doing. Or are they so supportive of what he's doing that they look back and see comments like that? I think, you know, the visual of Leah McMeer holding her nose is hard to overcome, even though that's what a lot of Republicans did in Wisconsin after, you know, Trump did not win the primary here. There was a strong movement against him. But, you know, maybe people have short memories. Maybe they don't remember that in this case. And Kevin Nicholson has made a pretty big point of aligning himself with that wing, even though he is also backed by Ted Cruz, who was a big Never-Trumper.
And you can't, Kevin Nicholson gave money to Rubio in the primary. Yep. He's got people on staff who were Never-Trumper, you know, so
yeah.
That whole thing. The other things I'm watching, talk radio, what role will it play?
Yeah.
Jay Weber has formerly endorsed Leah, so will there be a big push from those guys in that? Mm-hmm. I went and looked. The Milwaukee media market, the counties in that media market, accounted for 46% of the primary vote in 2012. Green Bay, another 21%. I mean, that's huge. So yeah. I think Leah has to run up the score in the Milwaukee media market, hold her own in Green Bay to offset the advantage that Nicholson likely has outstate.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing, will the Donald tweet about the Senate race in the final 3 days?
Yeah. That's the wild card at this point, right?
That could change everything. Honestly, that could change everything. He's become a kingmaker in primaries. That's you can't deny that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's quick run down a couple of other primaries. First congressional district primary, first Republican side. Jesse, is there any chance Brian Steele does not win the Republican nomination to succeed Paul Ryan?
I don't think so.
All right. So now on the Democratic side, it's Randy Bryce, you know, the Iron Stash, mm-hmm. and Kathy Myers. My sense is that Bryce has such a financial advantage, it'll be tough to overcome. But is there a chance for Kathy Myers to win that race, do you think?
There's always a chance. I think, you know, looking at what's happened throughout the country, it's tough to bet against Democratic women running in primary races right now. But like you said, Randy Bryce kind of has that built-in advantage. Caught fire really early, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally, and that really helped raise money. Having the target on Speaker Ryan at that point on his back was a huge draw for people to pour money in. And Kathy Myers has made up some ground in terms of fundraising, and she's certainly making a respectable showing. It pales in comparison to what Randy Bryce has been able to do.
I think the fact that Bryce's fundraising clip has slowed shows you that the attraction this race has faded a bit because it's not about taking out Paul Ryan anymore. And now you look at what happened in Ohio on Tuesday. I think Democrats are talking about 68 House districts that are more Democratic than Ohio 12.
Yeah.
I don't know where Wisconsin 1 fits in that pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
But my guess is when you got to flip two dozen seats, you're going there first before you come here because there's no longer the speaker in play. I don't know what they'll get natural resources-wise after August 14th. Let's jump to some legislative primaries. This one I think you have some interesting expertise in. The 9th Assembly District, Josh Zepnick beat Marissa Belcabrera by 149 votes 2 years ago in a district that's become much more Hispanic over the years.
Yeah.
But there's a new dynamic this time. What do you think is going to happen, or what do you see at play in this race come August Tuesday?
Yeah, you know, from what I've read, Marissa Belcabrera was thinking about or was interested in challenging Josh Zepnick again, regardless of what's happened in the interim because of how close that race was, and she saw an opportunity to do that. Of course, what happened about 6 months ago is that two women who have been involved in Democratic Party politics accused of him of having kissed them without their consent. He had been drunk at the time. These were events in 2011 and 2015. And I haven't been reporting closely on the dynamics of that race because it's in Milwaukee, I'm in Madison, but what I've heard and noticed from the reporting that I have seen is that this has absolutely been an issue that Marissa Belcabrera has tried to capitalize on in terms of painting him in a negative light. She's sent out mailers with blasting all the headlines from that point in time, which you know, I initially covered, but that got a lot of coverage in the Milwaukee media market too. He has told reporters that he's talked to that voters are forgiving and they're, you know, well, you talked to him, so you know what he said about that. But it's absolutely become an issue in that primary.
I just don't know. It's fascinating to me that he's still getting support from some labor groups. Still gave him money in the last fundraising report. Tim Carpenter, state senator, gave him money,
mm-hmm.
Said he thinks that people should get a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Me Too environment, in where the Democrats are right now, he should be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But that's such a low turnout district.
Yep.
There were like 2,500 votes cast in that primary 2 years ago. By comparison, the open 11th district at the time, right, not far from there, had more than 5,000.
Yeah.
That should tell you like how it's one of the lowest turnout districts in the state. With that going on, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Hit real quick on the 86th Assembly District. John Spiros of Marshfield, the only Republican incumbent, draw a primary opponent. From what I hear up there, so Americans for Prosperity, this kind of a group, is doing stuff. Like, they've gotten into express advocacy lately in some races.
Yeah.
They're doing stuff for him. Members of the Republican caucus are up there doing stuff for him. It's interesting, his opponent, the Mosinee mayor, is talking about raising the gas tax and relaxing property tax limits. Not usually a winning message in a primary.
No.
But the fact there's so much effort behind Spiros tells me one, two things. Either one, they're nervous about his chances, or two, they just want to make sure no surprises happen with a member. You never lose a member in a primary.
Right.
Let's jump back to Madison. The four-way primary for Teresa Brousseau's seat. Who do you think is the kind of front runner there?
Yeah, I think Sheila Stubbs, she's on the Dane County Board. She was the first in. She was quickly endorsed by Teresa Brousseau. She's gotten a lot of endorsements from elected officials, both at the local level and within the legislature. So I think most people would probably agree she's the front runner. She's another opponent. Shabnam Lotfi is an immigration attorney. She's a young millennial Muslim woman. And so you've got two women of color running in this race and two older white men running in this race, John Imes and Mark Garthwaite, both have science backgrounds. John Imes is involved in an environmental group. Mark Garthwaite is the executive director of the Wisconsin Brewers Guild. All kind of have their own constituencies backing them, but it would seem Sheila Stubbs probably has the most institutional support at this point.
Yeah, if you look at the fundraising reports, both Sheila and Shabnam are way out in front financially. The question I've heard from people is, do you really think that the Madison electorate, Democratic primary electorate, really wants to vote for two middle-aged white guys when they have people of color on the ballot, the chance to send the first Muslim to the state legislature or the first African-American from Dane County legislature? So,
and both very qualified, but, you know, beyond the racial politics involved there.
So one last one. I hit on the 59th Assembly District. This is Jesse Kramer's seat that he's leaving to go back to the private sector. It's interesting here. The American Federation for Children Independent Action Fund is doing ads in this race for Rachel Mixon. Ty Bodden is the other guy to watch. He's been endorsed by Kramer and Dewey Strobel. What I've been told is that AFC is playing, they're playing in three assembly seats. And what I'm seeing or hearing is that they're playing for people who are seen as like more likely to work with leadership, more likely to be kind of team players who are conservative, who are good on school choice, but aren't necessarily bomb throwers or people from like the kind of the very far right wing of the party.
Mm-hmm.
So it's here that, so that's an issue to watch. But in a primary, it's the Republican primary especially, it's who is the most conservative. I mean, is that, how is that going to play versus having some independent groups doing ads, you know, mailers and online stuff in favor of her. So that's the stuff I'm watching there. Now let's talk the stock report real quick before we run out of time.
Yep.
Rising this week, I have Airbnb revenues. So obviously this has been an issue about how to regulate these things or tax them. First look, they turned over $2.5 million in occupancy taxes to the state. That's up from what they thought was going to be $700,000. So, you know, a little cash
that's
to play
nice.
With.
Yeah.
So next, I have Acting Sheriff Schmidt in Milwaukee County.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating race.
Yeah.
Chris Abley, the county executive, has shown a willingness to play in primaries. He has spent his money liberally.
Mm-hmm.
He is it's not hurt him so much, for I can tell financially.
Yeah.
He's dropped $250,000 on TV for Schmidt, $50,000 in online ads. What I'm wondering is, you have a three-way race.
Yep.
Arnell Lucas is the other kind of top candidate to watch. David Clark used to be able to string together a coalition of African-American voters in Milwaukee and then conservatives in the suburbs. I don't know that coalition is there for Schmidt for a couple reasons. One, there's a contested U.S. Senate primary on the ballot on Tuesday. I don't know Republicans will pass up the chance to vote for Leah Vukmir or Kevin Nicholson to go vote Democratic primary for sheriff.
Yeah.
Two, Arnell Lucas is the only African-American in the race, so you would think that he may have an advantage with African-American community in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
So will Abley's money, will this big TV buy help Schmidt over the hump? What's also fascinating is he's calling him as progressive in these ads.
Yeah.
These stories are popping up saying he's anything but. And I don't know how that plays with Democratic base that's fired up right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's been kind of the late-breaking thing in this race, is seeing some women's groups, Women's March of Wisconsin, and other groups speaking out against Acting Sheriff Schmidt because of things that he said about domestic violence, because of the college that he attended, which is very fundamental kind of conservative religious background, which would not jive with what most Wisconsin progressives are valuing in a candidate. So I don't know. Was it too late? Was there enough attention on that stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, I think what I've heard is that Abel, you just want somebody he can work with.
Yeah. Like,
they've got along all right. So after Sheriff Clark, anything was
right,
you know,
right.
A breath of fresh air for Abel.
Yeah.
That'd be part of it. And lastly, for following of Kimberly Clark, Alberta Darling's co-chair of this Joint Finance Committee. I moderated a forum at WMC this week, and she said what we all know. Republicans don't have the votes right now, probably don't have the votes right now, mm-hmm. to pass that package on their own. What I've heard from people is that they're only one Republican so far has spoken up, Chris Acapia. That means at 18-15, they can't lose anybody else and pass it with Republican votes.
Yep.
I've heard that there are others who have concerns, are staying quiet right now. There are concerns about the precedent you set, because what happens when Kimberly Clark, when Oshkosh Truck or Harley Davidson or Johnson Controls or any other big Wisconsin company has layoffs? This package is Foxconn-like in the terms. It's not, and Foxconn was about attracting a new industry.
Yep.
This is retaining jobs. So I think people are like, that's kind of a little bit too expensive. And then finally, if you're a Democrat, once you attach the word Foxconn to anything, it's like, that is radioactive. So I don't know if the Dems want to vote for that, especially 2 months out from election. Have you been following that, or what do you pick up on that?
A little bit, yeah. I think that's, I wouldn't disagree with anything you said. You know, Democrats who represent that area, Dave Hansen being one in the Senate, had introduced sort of their own package of legislation that they prefer to what Governor Walker introduced. So it's not like, there's a risk in voting against something that's helping out a company in your district, but they've also got this alternative that they say, you know, if we can't support this thing, if we can't get Republicans on board with this, maybe we should take a look at this Democratic thing, and maybe it just ends up dying in that debate.
The final piece I heard was, you know, Alberta suggests they're still talking about terms. Well, Speaker Voss was there and said, basically, we're not coming back to take up anything.
Yeah.
All you have to have is a governor veto a couple things, we'll be fine. So if they do change it, I don't know the Assembly wants to come back and deal with it, so they're going to put pressure back in the Senate. And then it's a question of, if push comes to shove, do you vote for a bill that is literally make or break for 450 jobs in the Fox Valley?
Yeah.
Anyway, that is Rewind for August 10th. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
Thanks for watching. Steve Waltz will be back next week after spoiling his grandchildren. Have a great weekend.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.